Welcome in to Locked On Nets. I am your host, Josh Bass, and on today's show, Marcus and I will discuss a disappointing loss to Oklahoma City and what it means moving forward and break down the Nets' playoff chances moving forward. All that coming up on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Locked On Nets here. As I said before, I am your host, Josh Bass. And with me to provide up-to-date Nets content, game breakdowns, all that and more, and I guess talk about my dating life, because we're doing that now, Marcus Barahal. Marcus, you really betrayed me last episode, from what I heard.
Josh, I'm going to be completely honest. I didn't know if you would listen, if anyone would listen, so I kind of just went for it. Got a nice message on Twitter from a fan. I think you got a text from your dad, so...
My dad's listened to maybe one episode in the, I guess, year and a half that I've done it, and all of a sudden he decides to listen to that one.
He saw Marcus Solo. He said, download, listen.
Yeah, he hates me. He just likes when you're on.
It was
a good game. There was a lot of reason to listen to the last episode because the Nets dominated the Detroit Pistons by 28 points. I think... I was sad that I couldn't be on it because it was my favorite game of the season by far, just from start to finish. It was so enjoyable. Had a lot of great Rhodey Kurucz highlights. D'Lo had a good game. Dinwiddie was balling, of course. And it was never in doubt. So, but happy you were able to talk about such a good one.
Yeah, it was a really good game, like you said, and always good when Dinwiddie goes against one of his former teams. So nice to see that.
Absolutely, but wasn't nice to see the game last night against Oklahoma City. The Nets lost 108-96. The first half was good to see. The Nets were up consistently between 8 to 12 points. I mean, OKC closed it down a little bit to only 10 at the half, but I thought the defense was really good in the first half. Everyone was super active. The problem is the Nets would block a shot or two, but then OKC would get the offensive rebound or get a loose ball, and then they would still be able to convert on sometimes. So even though they scored 42 points, which is really good output for the Nets to hold them to that little, the Nets were playing initial defense even better than that.
Yeah, it was, I think, partially just because of the lineups. Like, the Thunder play a guy like Jeremy Grant next to Steven Adams, but the Nets don't really have a guy like that. I guess the closest it would be Rhodey, but he doesn't have that same level of intensity and effort when it comes to rebounding, I guess. So it was definitely a tough matchup in that respect, but the initial defense, like you mentioned, was really good. They were playing really vertically and just like kind of keeping their hands straight up and not fouling in the first half, which kind of allowed them to stifle Westbrook on drives. And then when it was kicked out to shooters, it was like guys like Jeremy Grant or Terrence Ferguson, who aren't the best outside shooters. So if you're kicking out to those guys, it's probably not the best offensive option.
Yeah, Jeremy Grant did play well. He went 2 of 6 on threes, but I feel like he hit more than that. But
I think both of those might have been in the second half.
Yeah, yeah. But they were both like backbreakers. One was the one where it either extended the lead to 10 or to 13 points. But yeah, I think the Nets, there was also a lot of plays where they forced a lot of deflections, and it could have gotten a turnover and led to a fast break. But unfortunately, when you have a guy like Russell Westbrook who's just running around like a maniac, he's able to secure those balls and plays where it could have been a turnover, and now they still have a chance to score. But, you know, I thought that the Nets played well up until the third quarter, and then Westbrook really got going. Paul George got going. Russell finished with 31 points in this game. Russell Westbrook, not D'Angelo Russell. And really, it was that fourth quarter where no one could stop him. I think the Nets did D'Lo a disservice by just having him out there on an island. I would have switched Rhodey Kurucz on him or Spencer Dinwiddie, because the Thunder were playing Ferguson, who's absolutely no threat to score in that lineup. So have D'Lo guard Ferguson, because Russell was just blowing by him. And if he wasn't scoring, it made Jared Allen come up to help, and they were throwing the easy lob to Steven Adams. So I wish Kenny would have made an adjustment earlier in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I wanted more Dinwiddie for sure. He played 27 minutes, but I thought that he was like clearly the Nets' best option in this game, at least. He had 25 points. He was like really efficient. He was kind of getting the basket whenever he wanted on offense. And on defense, like you said, I mean, no one's going to completely stop Westbrook, but Dinwiddie at least brings more size than D'Angelo Russell would. And yeah, with Paul George, too, like the Nets just, especially with Graham out and with Carroll out, they just had no one who could really like contain him size-wise or like even really come close.
It's interesting with Dinwiddie, though, because the games where he's playing really well and Russell's not playing, as well. It's just tough to give Dinwiddie that 35-minute workload because he's sitting the first 7 minutes of each, the first and third quarter. I think Kenny, I mean, he played 27 minutes, and he was the Nets' best player by far last night, I think. I think Kenny might be better served kind of studying the substitution patterns that Doc Rivers does with the Clippers, because Dinwiddie is kind of the Lou Williams of this Nets team, and there are going to be games, especially when it gets down to crunch time in this home stretch and in the playoffs, hopefully if the Nets secure their way there, where if the Nets want to be competitive, Dinwiddie's going to have to play at least 32 minutes a game, and so will D'Lo.
Yeah, and they were using some kind of funky lineups. I think one that you actually brought up a couple podcasts ago, late in the second half, where it was Dinwiddie, Karras, Joe Harris, Alan Crabb, and Jared Allen. So there's not really, that's basically four guards and Jared Allen. And like I mentioned earlier, when you're going against a guy like Jeremy Grant and Steven Adams inside, that's a lot for Jared Allen to handle. And I think he kind of got worn out and tired by the end.
Yeah, I don't know. He didn't have really any impact on the game. To play 30 minutes and only secure 5 rebounds, and I know rebounds aren't the be-all, end-all, but the Thunder missed a ton of shots. It's not like they shot 60% from the field. They shot 43% from the field. I think he had good initial defense, but there were plays, even the first play of the game, Steven Adams probably had 4 offensive rebounds in that possession alone.
Yeah, and also he was like kind of over-rotating a bit on the end on the Westbrook drives, and that kind of led to those lobs to Adams, and Adams like had a really easy block on Allen also on the other
end. That was bad. Well, that play, it was either Crabb or Dinwiddie maybe that was wide open in the corner. It should have been directly in Jared Allen's sight line, and for some reason he tried to just go up and do a reverse that got blocked probably before it even left his hand.
Yeah, I think he was still on the ground.
Yeah, that was bad. Also bad, Hubie Brown called the Nets the New Jersey Nets at least 15 times, and my roommates can attest to how annoyed I was each consecutive time because I couldn't watch the Yes Feed. I had to watch ESPN. So that was pretty frustrating.
Yeah, I don't know what you do there if you're Mark Jones, because like obviously you correct him at the beginning, but then if he keeps doing it, like at a certain point, I don't know, you just kind of let it go.
Yeah, I think you just have to reemphasize Hubie's age. It's like, Hubie, I can't believe you're doing this at 85. Just to hope the people at home watching are giving him a pass.
Yeah, I mean, he did have some nice analysis, I thought, on like the game itself, but when it came to like guys' names or like the team names, it was a little shaky.
Yeah, I like Hubie Brown, but he does, I feel like every setup he does is the exact same. It's like, you know, you're the Oklahoma City Thunder and you have Steven Adams inside, who's one of the toughest big men in the league. And he doesn't really, he just says facts. He's not really giving any sort of opinion or take. He's just like re-emphasizing the roster construct or the score. It's like, you have Russell Westbrook, he shoots a lot of mid-range jumpers, he's gonna need to hit those if you want to win. It's like, oh, thanks,
I
Hubie.
Feel like he's always saying like, now you take a look at this guy.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, okay.
he does the same thing every time, but I don't know, I'm happy the Nets were on national TV, and I feel like it was a good game, and I'm happy that the world got to see Spencer Dinwiddie, who I thought had a really nice game, 25 points, 8 of 17 from the field. He's getting so good at his crazy reverse layups also, over the shoulder.
Yeah, he had a really nice one. Karis LeVert, I mean, he struggled, but he had a nice one also at a certain point. And yeah, I mean, those shots are ones that the Nets are probably going to need in the playoffs just because it'll get even tighter and more constricted. So if you're able to finish like that, that's really, really useful.
Yep, absolutely. And we'll talk a bit more about Karis LeVert as the focus of our next segment coming up. Welcome back into segment 2 of Locked On Nets. Quickly wanted to tell you guys about a little thing that's coming up. The first weekend of the NCAA tournament is the greatest betting event of the year. Whether you like filling out a bracket, picking a national championship like I do, predicting first round upsets, or all of the above, MyBookie is the perfect home for your March Madness fun. Will Zion Williamson and his teammates cement their legacy at Duke with a title? Can Virginia get past its loss to a 16 seed last year? And can Kentucky get back to the Final Four? If you know the answers, and Marcus, I think you do, or even if you don't, MyBookie is the place to get in on the action. They have something for everyone, even you, multiple bracket guy. MyBookie has been in business for years. Their goal is to give you the best customer service in the business. And the best part is, they pay out fast when you win. I'm talking 48 hours here. Bet with the best, then kick back and enjoy March Madness while you watch your picks cash. Deposit with MyBookie today with promo code LOCKEDONNBA for a 50% sign-up bonus. That's promo code LOCKEDONNBA with MyBookie. You play, you win, you get paid. Marcus, I feel bad just calling it MyBookie. It should be OurBookie. But how good does that sound?
It sounds great. You know, it's my bookie, it's your bookie, it's bookie for the whole family, I think.
Yeah, it's bookie for the whole family. That's their new tagline. But yes, please do that. And also, when you're in your car, just say, hey, smart device, play Locked On Nets or any other podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network, because we're team players here, besides Locked On Knicks. Don't say them, but anyone else, you're good to go. Marcus, I feel like each consecutive game, I'm seeing a bit more and more consternation on Twitter about the play of Caris LeVert. And I think I was an early adopter to this because I can be pessimistic and I'm saying, oh, two or three bad games, what's happening to him? But it's been 14 games since his return, and he's really struggling right now.
Yeah, I mean, I usually like to give guys a little bit more time, and especially with the injury he was coming back from, which was, like, super traumatizing in addition to, like, the physical aspects of it. And when you think about it versus, like, the injury that Dinwiddie had, which was to his hand, like, Dinwiddie could still kind of stay in shape and everything. He could still run. He could still do most of the things he was doing before. But LeVert kind of had to redo his whole life while he was out, so I understand why he's been struggling, I guess, to kind of get back into things, why he is maybe coming up short on a lot of his jumpers because he doesn't have the leg strength. So I get that part of it, but at the same time, the Nets are in a playoff race, and they don't really have time to let this guy work his way back in if they're trying to win as many games as they can to hold off Detroit and to hold off, frankly, Miami and Orlando as well. Because like we said, this team hasn't been in the playoffs since 2015, so it's super important to get back in. It wasn't expected at the start of the year, but I think expectations have been raised, and Caris needs to kind of raise his game to match those expectations.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, the Nets have, what, 88% chance of making the playoffs, according to 538, and we know that they're never wrong, so it would be devastating if they didn't. And my problem with LeVert, I get it, like, it takes a while to come back for this type of injury, but if he looked rusty athletically, I'd say, okay, obviously, he just needs a lot more time, but his athleticism looks amazing, and his footwork is so good, and he's doing the exact same moves he was kind of pre-injury, where he's tricking his man, using that great pivot and that footwork, and then just completely botching these shots. I mean, there's so many plays where he'll break down the defender, be wide open, and then not even close, missing the rim on some shots. His finishing at the rim has been really bad, and since the All-Star break, he's shooting 34% on threes, which is pretty good for him. But his overall field goal percentage is 36.4%. It's just he can't make a two-point shot. He's missing so many easy layups. I just don't know what it is. But, you know, with Caris, he played really, really well to start the season. But again, that was only a 12-game sample size. I think I've said before, the first 2 years in the league, he was super inconsistent. And the Nets, if he doesn't play, I'm curious your thoughts on this. If he keeps this play up the rest of the season and into the playoffs, next year is going to be his fourth season in the league, there's no way the Nets can extend him before the season starts, right? They have to see him get healthy and have a season where he can live up to his potential.
Yeah, I think especially considering the fact that he was drafted like with injury concerns, he had like foot issues in the past. And so not that he's necessarily going to be like a chronically injured guy, but that's kind of what we have seen so far. So unless he can kind of prove that he can play a full season at the level that, or not necessarily at the level he was playing at early in the year, but at least approaching that, it's kind of tough to bet on him. At the same time, like, they don't have a ton of options ball handling wise, unless you want to go back to a guy like Napier, which I don't think is the answer. Or I guess playing Russell and Dinwiddie even more minutes, but it's, I don't know if it's worth the risk of tiring them out on this long road trip and everything. I think maybe if you can kind of ride him out, like stick with Caris for now, and then in the playoffs maybe shrink him a little more. But
right, well, yeah, he does have to play, and I think like we're seeing it now, his offense is going to be even more of a liability in the playoffs if no one's just going to guard him. But he does provide a nice defensive element. He's long, he's athletic, he tries, even though he has some momentary lapses. I think he actually would have been someone I would have wanted to try more on Westbrook, because with his length and his quickness, he can give point guards problems. So I'm high on his long-term ability, and I think his jack-of-all-trades nature does provide a nice bind between the kind of the Dinwiddie side and the Russell side. He's able to theoretically play with both of those guys and be a Swiss Army knife in a lot of different lineups. But if you shoot that poorly from the field, we need just more consistency, or else the offense is going to completely bog down, especially when you don't have a shooting center right now.
Yeah, I wonder if he should just like even look to cut back on his shot attempts and kind of be more of a distributor. Because he's a good passer when he decides to be, but he had a lot of plays in this game especially where he just kind of put his head down and was just kind of chucking a little bit, which, to be fair, like D'Lo did also towards the end. He was kind of throwing up shots. But I wonder if maybe LeVert could get more efficient by just kind of lowering his attempts.
Yeah, I feel like he didn't look to shoot too much last night. A lot of his attempts did come at the end of the shot clock, and he's quick enough to at least get something off, and not a lot of Nets can do that. It's probably Dinwiddie, D'Lo, who can just create a mid-ranger if he wants to, or a tough three. Karis, I think Rhodey can get there, and then Napier. But besides that, they don't really have any. Like, Crab can't do it. Beef Jerky Joe, as much as I love him, it's not going to happen. Jared Dudley is only going to shoot a wide open three or the fake dribble handoff. So a lot of times I feel like Karis, he wants to be a distributor, but the shot attempts are coming out of necessity.
Yeah, I thought Dudley played pretty well, by the way.
He was really good.
Changed topic, but he was great.
Yeah, I mean, 2 of 2 from three, had a lot of smart defensive play. He was all over the place in the first half.
Yeah, and I thought he filled in like pretty admirably for Carroll. Probably not the same like volume as Damari could bring, just because of like stamina, probably more than anything. But I thought he was good.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm curious. Do you think he'll get any run once Damari's back, or that's just he just pinch hit for those few games and then that's it?
Yeah, I think he'll probably be out of the rotation, but still good to see he's like staying ready.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know. Crab sucked last game.
Yeah, he made like I think one or two threes late, but he was really bad.
Yeah.
Early in
well,
the
game. All of his attempts were wide open and they just weren't going in. And that's the problem. The first half, the Nets finished with a 10-point lead, but it could have been 15 and above. They were just missing so many open threes.
Yeah, and they didn't necessarily take full advantage of like the Thunder struggling on offense. Oklahoma City only scored 19 in the first quarter, which was, I think they showed a graphic, it was like their lowest first quarter of the season. So to then give up 108 points in the game and also to not score 100 yourself is kind of tough.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so let's preview this upcoming West Coast trip. We'll take a quick break and we'll be right back. Last segment here on Locked On Nets. So with that Oklahoma City loss, Nets are right now 36-34. They are have a 6-game road trip. 5 of those are out west. And it starts with Saturday against Utah, then Clippers, Sacramento, Lakers, and Portland. So let's take we'll get rid of the Philly game for now, which is I don't really include that in that West Coast swing, of course, even though it is a road game. But for these next 5 games, Marcus, if what would be realistic outcome, ideal outcome, and then worst case scenario for you? I mean, obviously worst case scenario is 0-5, but let's just do realistic and ideal.
I mentioned this on the solo podcast. I think the Lakers game is very winnable. And then if you can kind of split this back-to-back with Utah and the Clippers. So I would say realistic is probably 2-3.
Mm-hmm.
And then ideal, you win one of the back-to-back games, you can beat Sacramento and you can beat the Lakers. I would say 3-2 is like a realistic ideal, if that makes sense. Obviously, you'd want to go 5-0 and you want to not go 0-5. But I think... I think the Nets are definitely like more than capable of beating the Lakers, and the Kings have had a great season, but at the same time, they don't have like any elite talent. Like, it's not going to be like the Nets are like outgunned in that game.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a winnable game. And then Clippers and the Jazz both are probably like in the Nets stratosphere, at least. They're not going to like, I don't think either of them is going to blow out the Nets. So it's just a matter of like, will Kenny rest guys in one of those two back-to-backs to kind of go all in on one? And if so, which one would he do?
Yeah. Well, because the schedule is sucks. Why are we playing Utah and the Clippers back-to-back? It should be Clippers in either Sacramento or ideally Clippers in the Lakers. I think Sacramento is probably the one out of these 5 that's a must-win. The Nets, it was a pretty close game earlier in the year on Martin Luther King Day until the Nets just thrashed them in the fourth quarter and ended up winning by 29. But Sacramento has been struggling of late. They're out of the playoff race at this point. I mean, they have a lot of young guys that are going to play hard regardless. Buddy Hield, Marvin Bagley, De'Aaron Fox, of course, but I think the Nets do match up pretty well with them, and that's the game they really need to get. And then, you know, Clippers always play the Nets pretty tough. Portland, the Nets haven't had any luck with for going back for the last few years, pretty much since the Damian Lillard, LaMarcus Aldridge teams first formed. So I'm not optimistic there, but yeah, the Nets really need to go 2-3. I mean, if they go 1-4, they would be at 37-38. And that's still a pretty good shape for the playoffs. I mean, if they go 1-4, there's pretty much zero chance they'd get the 6th seed. But still, obviously, at this point, it's just making sure they secure the playoff spot. And they're up 4.5 games right now on both Orlando and Charlotte. So I'm feeling pretty good there. But yeah, Marcus, do you see any way that the Nets get the sixth seed even?
Yes, but it would probably take like 3-2 on these five games and then stealing a couple in that like home stretch against Boston, Milwaukee, Toronto, and then they go on a road again till Milwaukee. So maybe if like those teams are locked into a seed at that point, like maybe Milwaukee's clinched the one seed by mm-hmm. that second matchup and they rest guys. That's possible.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping, because right now Milwaukee is three games up on Toronto, which looks like a pretty, I mean, not insurmountable, but it's going to be pretty tough for Toronto to catch them. And the Nets play them, when is the games against Milwaukee and Toronto?
April 1st against Milwaukee. And then
yep.
April
okay, I'm going to that
Toronto,
one. Yeah. I'm going to that one. That so, yeah, ideally in these next 2 weeks, Milwaukee will have separated themselves enough from Toronto where they rest their guys. Same with Toronto. And then hopefully the Nets are able to, in those three games against Milwaukee, two against Milwaukee, one against Toronto, even if they go 1-2, that would be enough. That would be pretty good. But who knows? Milwaukee might say, hey, we match up so well against the Nets. We've just destroyed them this year. Let's play our guys because we know we'll be able to take care of them really easily in the first round.
Yeah, that's possible. I think that happened in the NFL where it was, I think the Vikings maybe were like, or it was like Bears-Vikings, and the Bears like could have tanked the game to then have to play the Vikings in the playoffs, but they decided to beat them and then play the Eagles, who they lost to. So it could work mm-hmm. out. It could maybe backfires. Who knows?
Yeah, I wonder if was Budenholzer watching that.
I don't know if he's a football guy. He seems like he's all in on basketball. I feel like that's like his only hobby.
He's just watching tape nonstop.
Knicks tape.
Knicks tape. Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to see how this home stretch shapes up. I think, you know, that four-game winning streak the Nets were on, there were some nail-biters against Cleveland and Atlanta, and if they had lost one of those two games, I would be feeling so much worse. But luckily they pulled it out. That Atlanta one especially was very touch-and-go. Marcus, you saw how nervous I was when we were watching that together. I was a little disappointed that you weren't matching my level of intensity.
You know, I haven't been a lifelong fan like you, Josh. I'm new to all this.
Yeah, hopefully you will get there one day. But please, that will do it for this episode of Locked On Nets. But some plugs as we wrap up, of course. Follow my boy Marcus on Twitter at Marcus Barahal. I am at JMBass_. You can follow the joint podcast, and you'll never know which one of us is the one tweeting. It will probably be two-thirds me, one-third Marcus.
That sounds right.
Yeah, that's the only thing where I do more than 50%. Everything else I let Marcus take more.
Josh, quickly before we go, date was good?
Yeah.
Just need a follow-up for the listener. You don't need to elaborate anymore. Just need to know if it was good.
Yeah. Who is the listener? I'll DM him.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Okay. I completely lost my train of thought. Follow the podcast at Locked On Nets. Please rate, review, subscribe. Very excited for this home stretch of the playoffs, and we hope you're joining us throughout that. And tell your friends that might be joining the Nets bandwagon now that there is a great daily or semi-daily Nets podcast, and you want them to listen to it. If they want to come to any Nets playoff games or watch them, they have to first watch Locked On Nets and give the backstory of Marcus and Josh's friendship to prove their loyalty to the Locked On Nets fandom. But that's going to do it for today's episode, and we'll speak with you again later this week. Bye.
Bye.